Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. We need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. Go to podsurvey.com/firstdegree and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers that you won't want to skip. And once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/firstdegree. podsurvey.com/firstdegree. Thanks for your help.
The first degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
First degree.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
I was driving to work one morning, and a breaking news story came over the radio about, reports of a home invasion. A man accidentally shot his wife in the back while she was sleeping, trying to fend off a home intruder. It's just such a tragic accident. You know, this is breaking news. We'll let you know when we know more. And they said near the intersection of Wilshire and Council. No names, no nothing at this point. I mean, it was a very breaking news story. They really didn't know anything yet. And I immediately thought, oh my gosh, he killed her.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to William Jensen.
William Jensen.
And
Very refined framing of the Billy Jensen.
Very refined. So I thought it was time that we should bring back our giveaway contest of, if you guys go and write us a review on The First Degree on Apple Podcasts, we're going to give away a free merch thing every single week.
You get to pick whatever it is.
You get to pick whatever you want from our website. All you have to do is leave your Instagram at the end of the review so we can find you to give you the prize.
Yes.
So let's do it. Leave us some 5-star reviews.
And we're going to read the best ones.
We're going to pick our favorites. Yeah. So make sure it's good.
Yes.
Okay. So what day is it, Billy?
It's National Hug Day.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. I don't think I've gotten hugged yet today.
I hugged you.
You hugged me when you came in.
We hugged.
It was so unmemorable. I forgot.
You're welcome.
It's also National Lost Penny Day, too, which is in honor of Abe Lincoln's birthday, which it also is.
Oh. Hey, Abe. I feel like everybody is just losing their pennies. Yeah. Nobody cares.
No. 0%.
All right. Well, that's enough of that. So let's turn down the lights.
And turn up your anxiety.
Because this could be you.
We're going to start by closing our eyes. We're imagining that we're sleeping. We're sleeping soundly in bed. You're calm, you're tranquil, you're getting that REM sleep that you so badly need. But then you hear a noise. Maybe you have some sort of weapon in your room because you listen to a ton of true crime. You have pepper spray or a bat or a knife or whatever, a gun, whatever you're into, you've got something. But let's say you have a gun on your nightstand and you pull it out because you're terrified. You think there's an intruder who may harm you. It's dark. You can hardly see anything. It's confusing. One second you are asleep, and the next, you're in a life or death fight or flight struggle. You sense this intruder getting closer, and you raise your weapon. You pull the trigger in the darkness, and you feel a body falling to the floor. And then you realize that in this chaos, in this dark struggle, the figure of a loved one lays lifeless in front of you, and your life is changed forever.
Our case is taking us back to November 19th of 2014. Shake It Off by Taylor Swift was topping the charts, and The Hunger Games: Mockingjay was in theaters.
And the setting for today's case is Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. It's the 27th largest city in the U.S. It's located along famous Route 66. OKC has a large oil and gas community, along with one of the biggest livestock markets in the world. And it's a town not without peril. It's been hit with 13 tornadoes rated at least F4 or higher, which, if you've ever seen Twister, you know, F5 is the finger of God. F4, it's rough. And it was also the site of the deadliest terror attack in American history prior to 9/11, which was the 1995 bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Building, which killed 168 people.
So November 19th of 2014, it was 3:10 a.m. when a frantic call was made to the Oklahoma City Police Department. And the man on the phone was named Kenny Glasson, and he was completely hysterical. And through his cries, he explained that an intruder had broken into his home and entered the master bedroom of his house, and there had been a shooting. The 911 dispatcher wasn't entirely clear on what was happening, but they sent EMTs and police officers to this home. And when they arrived, they found a 41-year-old woman lying in bed, dead from a gunshot wound to the back. Her name was Erin Glasson, and she was the wife of the man who called 911. And the couple's 5-year-old daughter was in the house, down the hall from the master bedroom, but completely unharmed, thankfully. And the EMTs rushed to her aid, but she was pronounced dead at the scene.
The scene was chaotic, but police managed to sit Kenny, who was a smaller man with a shaved head and a goatee, down to hear what happened. Kenny was asleep in bed next to his wife, but something woke him up. He opened his eyes and saw an intruder in their bedroom, and the intruder was moving towards the couple. The man never said a word. He only grunted when Kenny asked him what he wanted and why he was there. Kenny grabbed his pistol from under the mattress and fired one shot. But as he fired, the intruder pushed his arm down, causing the pistol to fire in the direction of Erin, who was still asleep.
The police probed Kenny for a suspect description. But the ordeal had happened so fast, and there were no lights on. So all Kenny could see was that the intruder was a tall, large man wearing a dark hoodie.
Yes, so the scene presented a nightmarish scenario. A man trying to protect his home and protect his family had accidentally shot his wife.
So the police are trying to wrap their heads around what they're dealing with here. They need to find this intruder, and they start with an initial canvas of their neighborhood. They speak to one of Kenny and Aaron's neighbors. His name was Joe Prio, and they learned that there had actually been multiple home invasions in the neighborhood before. So they have a lead and start to look into these other break-ins to see if they could lead to one perpetrator.
This is our first degree, Lauren. So Lauren at one time had been very close to Kenny and Aaron. Lauren and Kenny were very good friends, and Lauren eventually married Kenny's brother. So she became part of the family. You know, Kenny was her brother-in-law, and Erin became her sister-in-law. And here she is talking about Kenny.
Years ago, I used to go to bike nights, motorcycle nights, at a local bar with a friend, and this was a mutual friend of ours. And so that was how I got to know him. You know, he was always just kind of life of the party and boisterous and outgoing, and you know, the biker scene is a lot of flirtation and probably inappropriateness. And to be perfectly honest, I had known him for probably almost 6 months before I ever knew he was married. Like, I didn't even know he had a wife. I thought he was single. I didn't know Kenny was married at all. Nobody ever talked about his wife. She wasn't ever around.
So Kenny and Lauren have this friendship, and eventually Lauren gets set up with Kenny's brother, and she ends up marrying him. So this is the family that we referenced in the beginning that Lauren has married into. But after marrying into this family, it didn't work out with the brother, so she's no longer with him. So she ended up finding out about all of this after that relationship was over.
So that night, they release Aaron's picture on the news, and my phone starts blowing up because the last name comes out, and people that have known me for a long time knew that used to be mine. My friend messages me on Facebook and just says, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe this." And I said, "I know, I'm so sad for the daughter, and I'm in shock. How are you?" She says, not very good. We're all taking this really hard. I really hope he's telling the truth. Because at that point, the only story anyone knows is that there was a home intruder, that he saw a tall, dark person in a hoodie, and that he had a gun, or Kenny had a gun and was wrestling with this person, and they hit his arm and the gun went off and shot Erin in the back while she was asleep. That was the story we knew at that time. So when my friend is messaging me and just saying, I really hope he's telling the truth, I can't see this happening at all, I said, honestly, I could see it both ways, you know, that he had killed Erin, but was it accidental, or, you know, was there even a home intruder? What's going on?
So back at the scene, Erin was pronounced dead due to a single gunshot wound to the back. And the medical examiner determined that she had died of internal hemorrhage due to perforating gunshot wounds.
And in this initial phase of the investigation, there's a lot going on. There are officers canvassing the neighborhood looking for clues that could lead them to their intruder. They also needed to know as much as they could about the couple, who their friends were, whether they had any enemies, whether he had noticed anything odd happening in the weeks or days preceding the break-in.
So they learned that 33-year-old Kenny and 41-year-old Erin had been married almost a decade and had one young daughter.
Neighbors say the two loved their 5-year-old daughter and tried a long time to have her.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, they're wonderful people. One of the sweetest people I've ever met. I mean, would do anything for anyone. Such a kind heart, loves animals.
When I heard that Erin had passed away, you know, the first feeling was obviously, you know, shock, just like, oh my gosh, I know these people. I used to know them very well, you know, but then immediately my head went to their daughter and it was just like, oh my gosh, she's 5. She just lost her mother. She's 5. She was down the hall in her room asleep when this happened.
So we wanted to know from Lauren whether or not she observed any red flags in Kenny and Erin's relationship.
You know, I have the unique perspective of kind of seeing two sides of their relationship. You know, there's the social side and the personal side. So in the social side of their relationship, you know, what everybody knew, you know, they're happily married. Aren't they so cute? They're still kind of in that honeymoon phase. You know, they're just the best couple ever. And they're just doing really well. And it's fun to be around and this, that, and the other. But then there was always tension. It felt like when we were around them outside of that biker scene, I think Erin worked in human resources. She was very hardworking, professional, you know, and Jay was kind of, I think he did a lot of heat and air work. I know at one point he was delivering air, like medical air tanks for people and things like that. You know, he kind of bounced around a lot. And it just always, you know, there was always stuff about money, about Jay not working. And she, you know, she was very responsible, very hardworking, very good with money. And he wasn't.
Back at the scene, police were using canine officers in an attempt to track the intruder. And the police looked for signs of forced entry, but they weren't able to find any visible marks on any of the doors or windows. But there was an exterior wooden fence of the Glasson home that did have some visible damage.
And by this point, Kenny is at the police station being questioned by the police, and he drops a bombshell on them. He explains that while he loved his wife, Erin, he had been cheating on her recently with 24-year-old Reva Ann Smith, who danced at a strip club. Reva was actually a widow and a mother to 3 young children. Kenny spoke about the affair with the blonde dancer freely, and it seemed to police that cheating was something Kenny did throughout his entire marriage to Erin.
Right, and this information, as the police are learning it, it's becoming part of the investigation, and the media is catching wind, too.
Then as the days progress, the news stories start coming out with he was in a relationship with this girl, Heaven, and that, you know, they'd been together for quite some time. And she was from, I think, this is all based on news stories I've read and stuff, but I think she was from a pretty small town. She had some trouble herself with the law, but it was minor. There was something about she had missed a court date, and so they had issued a bench warrant for her arrest.
Okay, so then when Lauren heard about this, secret girlfriend that Kenny had, it sort of shook loose a memory from her past when she was still married to Kenny's brother.
He gets in a major motorcycle accident. When the wreck happened, I was still with his brother. But they were at a club. A bunch of them were at this dance club bar that we'd go to sometime. The story we were told from Kenny is he was getting on the interstate, because this bar was kind of right off the interstate. It was like you exited on the right, and it was like a block or two down. And then to get back on the interstate, you know, you went a block or two back to the interstate, go across the bridge, and then it's an on-ramp. And he said he hit loose gravel on the on-ramp and lost control of the bike. And that's what happened. And it darn near ripped off his toe or something. He had a lot of surgeries and had to go through. He was wearing steel-toe boots, and if he hadn't, he would have lost his foot. Later, it was said that he had met a stripper. He was really drunk after she wanted to go for a ride, and that she was giving him a lap dance while he was driving his motorcycle. And he lost control of the bike. She got hurt, but her friends picked her up because he was freaking out that his wife couldn't know she was with him.
So the fact that Kenny was having an affair added a wrinkle to this investigation. And also presented a host of questions. Is there more to this story? Is this a love triangle gone awry? Who were the other people in Reva's life, and could they be somehow involved? So just as police's minds start going there, Kenny tells them that Reva was actually currently incarcerated at the Stevens County Jail on charges of unauthorized use of a vehicle, as well as jumping bail. So to their surprise, he expressed relief at the fact that she had been locked up. And he was relieved by it because he was actually trying to get his marriage back on track. So he was happy because he'd been trying to end this affair and had been unsuccessful in doing so.
So the police regroup, and now they have to take a good hard look at Kenny. And they also need to go to the jail and speak with Reva. The police learned that Kenny was sort of a floater career-wise. He did odd jobs like installing AC units, and he had a part-time job at a hardware store. And as police kept digging, it seemed to be the fact that Kenny's biker lifestyle was his priority.
When you're in that biker scene, it's a lot of alcohol, a lot of topless women, and, you know, strip clubs, and just different types of people around. And, it's, you know, bike rallies, just bike games are not family friendly. There's titty contests and frozen thong contest where girls are in thongs sitting on blocks of ice and whoever melts theirs first wins, you know. It's just a different life.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways, and with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences, and before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's True Accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the RealReal makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the RealReal, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
Meanwhile, evidence from the glass and home was being poured over, and some glaring inconsistencies were becoming apparent. The canine officers that had been utilized at the scene hadn't been able to pick up on the intruder's scent. Ballistics experts studied the trajectory of the gunshot that killed Aaron, and the geometry wasn't really aligning with Kinney's story. Also, there was no forced entry, and the quote-unquote destroyed fence on the exterior of the home appeared to be superficial. The police were also perplexed by some of the elements of Kinney's story. The idea that Aaron would have slept through this entire ordeal and Kinney's struggle with the intruder didn't really add up to them. Also, nothing was stolen or missing from the home. And then there's the issue of Kinney Glasson not being able to give any kind of description of any kind of subject other than he was tall and wearing a hoodie.
So at this point, the police were sure there was more going on here than just an accidental shooting. And their suspicions would be validated further after speaking to Kenny's mistress, Reva Smith, at the jail. And they learn a plethora of things from Reva. First being, the pair had met at the Double D Saloon in Oklahoma City. And let's paint a picture of the Double D Saloon. It's a club by the airport that might have some bikers as clientele, but it's not entirely a biker roadhouse bar. It's got a nice interior filled with busty blonde and brunette dancers, and the Double D currently hosts vibrator races on Thursday nights, which is kind of like the old Pinewood Derby races, where you roll your little car down a slanted track, but with vibrators.
That sounds fun.
Kind of does sound fun.
Reva performed at the Double D under the stage name Heaven. And she said that Kinney sparked up this romance after he gave her jewelry for her birthday in July of 2014, which is about 5 months prior. Kinney asked her to quit dancing at the club, and he started to pay her rent and her utilities. He bought her gifts, clothes. Then came the promises. Promises for the future of a life together with a house, with her kids and a vacation. They were going to be one big happy family with a white picket fence. And she said that actually before she went to prison, her and Kinney shopped for engagement rings. So her story seemed to conflict drastically with what Kenny was saying. He had not been trying to distance himself from Reva in the weeks leading up to Aaron's death. In fact, it seemed to be exactly the opposite.
The police didn't know if Reva could be trusted, but there was one thing that they did have. Because she was in prison, all of the recent phone conversations between Kenny and Reva were recorded. So they looked at these conversations. On one, Kenny told Reva he needed to be absolutely sure she wanted to be with him before he transformed his quote-unquote complete life for her. And she said, "That's what I've always wanted from day one." He said, "I want you to be with me every night. I don't want anybody or anything else." He also said, "Honey, I love you more than anything in this world." And Reva told the police that the relationship was more than sex, which they usually had in area motels. She said it was romance.
And there were also the letters that Kenny sent Reva. He told her that they would soon be together. She just needed to get out of jail. And he told her he was going to get money to bail her out of jail. But here's the thing. Kenny was not the breadwinner of this family that he was in. That was Aaron. And Aaron was also the one that paid the bills and took care of all the finances, and she was very good with money. She would have noticed if a big chunk of money suddenly went missing from their checking account. Where was Kenny going to get this money?
So police are taking all of this in, and it was all shocking. But what they would learn next would really change the course of this investigation. As the police continued to question Reva, she started making comments about Kenny's highly secretive job with the FBI. And she said, yeah, he works at the FBI. He showed me his badge. And she said that from the beginning, he stated that his job was secretive. It took him on the road a lot, and he wouldn't be reachable all the time. And the police were perplexed by this because by now they had learned that Kenny was a 33-year-old guy with no real steady job. He was not an FBI agent. And he also told Reva that he had been married before, but that he and his wife were separating in January. And he also said that the couple's 5-year-old daughter wasn't his. Rather, she was an adopted daughter.
He had some sort of badge that he would flash around that, you know, not really show, but, oh yeah, I'm an FBI agent, flip, you know. This Heaven person and her whole family, according to news reports, were basically led to believe he was an FBI agent. That it was the explanation for why he wasn't around all the time. Not that he is married and has a family, but that he was on cases all over the country. When in fact he was like a heat and air technician. He had said he wasn't married when he met her. And then she ultimately, I believe, found out that he was somehow. Someone had let her know. And he said, well, we are, but we're separated. You know, our divorce will be final in January. And no, they weren't. They were completely still together. It always bothered me because I've always considered myself a pretty honest, truthful person with integrity. And there was none there. He's probably one of the biggest pathological liars I've ever met.
So where does Kenny's mistress, Reva Smith, fit into all of this?
This is a girl who, and again, I'm just speculating that I don't know her at all. Kenny could be very charming and very, you know, he kind of a chameleon type, you know? He could come across as, I'd give you a shirt off my back. What do you need? How can I help? How can I be there for you? How can I care for you? Or this, you know, Billy badass biker. Don't mess with me. Don't mess with my people. And he just would adapt depending on who was around. And I feel like this girl comes from a small town. You know, she's working as an exotic dancer to pay some court costs and just try and get back on track with her own life. And here's this guy. He's an FBI agent. And how glamorous and exciting is that when you're from small town nowhere, Oklahoma? And he wants me, and he sees me for me, and he sees how hard I'm working, and he wants to make a life with me. And then find out later it's all a lie. That's horrible. I hope she understands. if it wasn't her, it would have been somebody else. He's always been a grass is greener type. You know what I mean?
So there are a couple of interesting things going on here. The first being sort of this biker lifestyle and the life that Kenny kind of curated around him. The second is his need to fabricate this FBI life, a job, an existence of more importance, some grandiose sort of existence that he needed to fabricate. And there is this element of that here, like a fantasy. So where does that all play in?
That's his version of a trophy wife, I think. Not to give credit, everybody in that profession, they're doing what they got to do to make ends meet. More power to you. But in that world, too, is a lot of role play, right? And augmentation. And just making yourself into something else. And it's that fantasy lifestyle a little bit. So to me, this is just me. I feel like he had this fantasy in his head that he and, you know, stripper girl were going to run away together. He's going to kill his wife and get the insurance money. And they just live this happy little fake life.
So we've been doing a deep dive into the players in this case. Let's get back to the investigation. Because it's at this point that the police truly understand what's going on here. And their theory was this. Aaron's death was not accidental at all. Rather, it was staged by Kenny. It was all part of a plan to get Aaron out of the way so that he could be with the woman he was actually truly, quote unquote, madly in love with. And the thing that the police learn next is the nail in the coffin for Kenny. There was a $500,000 life insurance policy on Aaron. And guess who the beneficiary was? That's right. It's Kenny.
Now, breaking news, a husband arrested in the shooting death of his wife.
Oklahoma City Police just confirmed to me about 45 minutes ago that they arrested Kenny Glasson around 5:15 tonight at his home. He is accused of shooting and killing his own wife.
You know, again, another wave of shock. Of just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is unfolding with, you know, people I used to be close to. But that at the same time, it was, I'm not surprised. I knew it. You know, just disbelief, but not at the same time. It was just such a double-edged sword a little bit.
The police had enough to arrest Kenny, and they charged him with first-degree murder. At trial, he clung to the story about encountering this unknown intruder and Aaron shooting being an accidental, the sort of Oscar Pistorius defense. When the guilty verdict came down, Kenny mouthed, "I'm sorry," at his mother in the courtroom. And when he was taken away and his mother went outside, she was heard saying over and over again, "He didn't do it."
He should not be allowed to live outside of the walls of the jail. He has taken the life of a hardworking, responsible woman and mother. And for no reason other than selfish gain. I think the jury got it right. But being around people that are like that, I hate liars. I do. I don't say the word hate. I say I don't like things, but I hate liars. If you cannot be real, I shut the door. I don't know. I've always had an issue with grandstanding and mask wearing, and it is very hard to see through masks of people sometimes. But when you are around people like this, it does give you a little better radar, maybe. Or at least I'd like to think it does. But yeah, I cannot tolerate deception and falsehood.
An unknown intruder entered our house, and I killed my wife by accident. It's a tale as old as true crime. In 2014, Seth Tetchel of Iowa was convicted of killing his pregnant wife after claiming an unknown intruder had entered his house while he was taking a shower and shot her. In November of last year, Noah Gaston of Maine was convicted of deliberately shooting his wife with a shotgun after claiming he thought she was an intruder. It's a convenient defense, and accidents can truly, truly happen. But when you dig deeper into the situation, the truth usually comes out, and justice sometimes is served.
So there was obviously a very high-profile case that was similar to this, the Blade Runner case, Oscar Pistorius, mm-hmm. Where he I think he had a fight with his girlfriend, Reva. Reva goes into the bathroom. He says he falls asleep.
So his story is not that there was a fight. It's just that she was right. in the yes. bathroom. Later, when people say they hear yelling is when they're like, then he says there was a fight. But his story is, I heard a rustling. Mm-hmm. I thought Reva was asleep yeah. next to me. I went in and I shot into the bathroom because I thought it was an intruder and I thought Reva was in bed.
Right. Yeah.
And that sounds super reasonable because you think about South, because this is a case that happened in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So it's South Africa and you hear about the crime rates and but then like slowly you start to unpack it.
Yeah.
Where it's like he lived in a fucking really tight, secure yeah. development where it was highly unlikely that there would be intruders, you know what I mean? And it's like, then you learn that he's reckless with guns and you start unpacking the information. And that's sort of what happened.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, and we've seen this case time and time again. Sometimes, you know, it does happen that it is accidents. You have a gun in the house. It's oftentimes at night. You don't necessarily have your wits about you.
Have you ever heard of one that was actually an accident? That you believe was an accident? Because I don't recall one.
I can't think of
a single one. I recall the defense. I don't recall it being an actual accident.
And it's like, I get why people would try to probably argue that for their own sake, because it's like, I was half asleep and I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I heard something.
Well, last year, there was a guy in Michigan who thought he heard a prowler, took out a gun and shot, only discovered that he killed his wife, and he was actually released the next day.
And there is an exception. Of course it's happened. That's where this defense probably came from. It
right.
really did happen. And I think the most, for me, I would believe this if there was like an alarm that went off and she was supposed to be at home and maybe they slept in different rooms. Like there has to be, the problem I have with Oscar Pistorius, for example, is that like, I thought she was in bed.
Yeah.
And then people reported hearing screaming earlier, fighting. And their phones also corroborate there were some issues happening. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like with text she was getting. This is interesting because he staged the scene so poorly. He disturbed like an exterior fence, but didn't create pry marks. The insurance is you're just,
but
get
then
the
also,
insurance when you get married. Don't do it well, right before.
Talking to your exotic dancer girlfriend that you want to marry over the prison phone,
and which then
is
saying
going to
that
be
you're
going to
get rid of his or turn your life around or whatever,
completely change my life.
Yeah. Like what else? I mean, I wonder if somebody said, like, what did you mean by that other than killing your wife?
Yeah.
Like, and also just the fact that there's also a difference between like an Oscar Pistorius thing where he thinks he's shooting the intruder, and then this one that it's so weird that the guy hit his arm and it just happened to be a kill shot for his wife. Like the odds of that actually happening are probably so slim to none. It's insane.
You know, Oscar's story is ridiculous, but way more believable.
Way
than
more
this.
Believable.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Lauren, for being our first degree connection today. Your interview was incredible. We thank you so much. If anybody has a story to tell, please email us at hello@thefirstdegreepodcast.com. Remember that we're still doing our giveaway, or we're starting a new giveaway for podcast reviews on the podcast app. Just remember to leave your Instagram, or we'll be choosing one winner a week to give some free merch to. Follow us on Instagram @thefirstdegree, @AlexisLinkletter, @BillyJensen, @JackVanek. Join our Facebook page by searching The First Degree in the search bar. Go buy some merch and stick around for killing time.
And remember, only you can prevent serial killers and keep your friends close.
But not that close.
Happy hug day.
Penny day. Sources for today's episode include Oklahoma Channel 9, KFOR, Oklahoman, The Associated Press, court documents, and as always, our First Degree interview is always our largest source.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
All right, welcome to Killing Time. Somebody had a little like inside burp. Was that you?
It was not me.
It wasn't me.
I could hear it.
It was Billy.
Drinking today. How would I have an inside burp?
You're drinking Dr. Pepper.
You could still be gassy.
Yeah, you're gassy.
Like alcohol doesn't have anything to do with gas.
Right.
Unless you're drinking beer.
Well, yeah, whatever, which I am. So yeah. Maybe it was me.
Maybe
sure.
It, yeah, there you go.
Okay, so we're still going through questions because I just remembered that I had posted questions on Instagram as well, and we haven't looked at any of them mm-hmm. yet. Ooh. Back in the day, these are from
I love this
whole different group of people on Instagram than in the Facebook.
Yeah, whole different group of people. These are from December, but it doesn't really matter. I'm going to start with this question because I don't think that we've ever really talked about it. It's from Hannah Kate, and she says, "What was the first case causing you to get into true crime?"
All right. For me, as a kid, it was the JFK assassination. And obviously, I wasn't like I was alive at the time.
Right.
But I saw a show called The Man Who Saw Tomorrow, which was about Nostradamus. And it was all things about how Nostradamus predicted this
or that.
It's all bullshit. But there was a part.
Also, those Nostradamus predictions are so stupid. It's like a psychic.
Yeah.
But
there was this whole thing about... you know, two brothers, one gets shot from the sky, which was that. But then they showed the thing about Grassy Knoll and the Badge Man and all of this, the things. And I just got really into it the next day. I went to my library in junior high and said, can I see any of the JFK assassination books? And then I did that for like a month straight and just got really, really into it. And then I solved the case and then I moved on to the next one.
Yeah, solved
right.
it.
Totally solved it.
It was Oswald. Sorry.
What was yours, Alexis?
So in my senior year, in Smithtown High School, which is where I went, you had to pick a senior project topic. Mm-hmm. And it's the most boring one now. But at the time, in 2005, Ted Bundy, I was like, I'm going to do like a deconstruction of Ted Bundy or whatever for my senior project. And just sort of, and that's what I did. And then I loved it. And I graduated and my trajectory was sort of set.
Right.
Who knew?
Mine was when I was a kid. Heaven's Gate, mm-hmm. for some reason, when I was like, I think I might have been like 8 or 9 when it happened, maybe a little bit younger. My parents said that I was obsessed with it.
Hale Bopp stuff?
Yeah. And I think I was more so.
Makes sense. I know what you're going to say.
The Nikes?
Yeah.
And the
fashion.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just, I still think it's the crazy. I'm like, I think of it today as I'm like, that's the worst PR day for Nike in the history of Nike or the best.
It went well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fine. But could you imagine working for Nike and being like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I loved, I was obsessed with Heaven's Gate when I was a kid. And then, I mean, I just like watched Unsolved Mysteries all the time. I always kind of had a love for it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Serial got me into the podcast.
Yeah. I was always into it too because my mom's an attorney. She was always into crime. And we would watch Law and Order SVU. And we were into all of it. Mm-hmm. And also, I just think inherently women like want to know how to not die. So we study this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, for me also, like I talk about in my book, the whole my dad coming home and saying they caught the 44 caliber killer, Son of Sam. I mean, that's it's my first memory of ever speaking a word.
Yeah.
So it was that was probably the first, but I didn't go back to I didn't like study that one until after I got into JFK and then I started studying.
Right.
Berkowitz.
I just saw that Jared asked a question.
Oh, what's his?
He said, why didn't you pick me for all 5 of your celebrity questions?
Jared.
One is enough, Jared. One is enough. There was, I can't find this now, but somebody had asked.
Wait a minute. Wasn't Wasn't Alexis's celebrity crush Jared?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Hey, Jer.
Hey, Jer.
Call me.
Mum's the Word says, what is the best drink to indulge while listening to The First Degree? And also, I can't find it now, but somebody else had asked, if The First Degree had a cocktail, what would it be?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I think that's going to take a little bit of time, but yeah.
What do we think? Like as a brainstorm sesh?
I think something with, I think a dark and stormy situation, like a, like I'm almost whiskey, thinking, mint, maybe.
I was thinking maybe not a Manhattan or like an old fashioned, but something along the lines of
that. I could see an old fashioned. Something along the twist.
With charcoal. Like, where were we? Ooh. We were on Salt's Cure, and they had those black cocktails that had a purified charcoal in it.
There's this thing when I was in Breckenridge at the Breckenridge Distillery, they had this like barrel that they'd put the drink in, like a whiskey drink, and then they'd fill the barrel up with smoke. So then all like the smoky taste would get infused into the whiskey. And then every time you take a sip, you're supposed to turn the glass so you'll always get like the whiskey in your...
Can I confide in you about something?
What?
When you said whiskey drink, and I was like, no, stopped. I just said a drink. Knock it up again. I was like, yeah, okay. Like that's all you say is a whiskey drink, and that's where you go.
Tub thumping man,
right? Yep.
So we think it's like some type of a whiskey,
smoky whiskey type
situation. Okay. Well, I have two good questions coming up. One will be a quick answer, maybe. It's from Chelsea McCann, and she says, "What happened to Bitches in the Bathroom?"
Okay, we could play what we have.
I think, have we not played it before?
No.
Well, we've told the story of how I, with Alexis's help.
No. Stop this. I literally did most of the lyrics.
It's a lie.
You're lying.
No, I'm not.
You, for some reason, cut me out of this memory. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever experienced as your friend.
Okay, whatever. We
wrote it in my bed, first of all. And you literally blocked out this whole thing. And the narrative has changed where you and my ex were like on some like musical fucking transformative experience together. And that I wasn't there, which is wild.
I don't remember you being there. Okay.
Maybe you guys are in love. Sorry, Jer. Me and you. You go date Mark Torres. Hey, Mark.
So we wrote this song. For no reason. We thought we were going to be famous.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
It's a great song.
Never released it, obviously. It also, I never finished it. It was only like halfway
done. We never finished it. Jesus.
So our goal was to have Jared kind of rewrite the music.
Jer?
And we need a better chorus. The chorus was weak. The verses were strong.
The hook was strong. It's catchy.
The chorus is weak.
It's not full enough.
No.
It's very
fleshed out.
It needs like a robust symphonic sound.
Yes.
Something very lush musically. Yes.
So we have Jared started working on it one time when I was in Phoenix, but then I told him to make it sound like a Kygo song. And he was like, you know that the way this song flows is not a Kygo song. So then he tried to do it. And I was like, you're right. This is fucking terrible.
Yes, Jack. It can't all be Kygo.
I know,
but
I want it to be
our own sound.
I don't know what the sound is.
That's because you're not consulting with the creative genius partner and you're just trying to do it yourself. But you know what? It was birthed from collaboration. It can only move forward with collaboration.
Fine.
And until you accept that I was there, we can't move forward.
Okay. So that's where Bitches in the Bathroom
is. That's
why.
It's because Jacqueline and I
honestly
are like thumb wrestling about who wrote it. And she literally denies. She's like a songwriting denier.
Well, it was all on my computer. I am the only one that knows how to use Logic. So I was taking sound class at the time in college.
I wrote the lyrics.
Well, here's what I'm
thinking. That's a lie. We definitely wrote the lyrics.
It's how I talk.
No.
The lyrics are how I talk.
We either collaborated or I wrote the lyrics.
You're insane. You're insane.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the next question. Katie McKenna says, what kind of cheese describes your personality?
Wow, that's a good question.
It's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question. Yeah.
Ooh. Mm. Okay, you know what? I think we should go around and name our personality, and then we will name the cheese for you. Because it's impossible. You have to be like, I'm this and this and this. We'll know which cheese it is.
I know what cheese I am.
Okay, what is it?
So you say your personality things.
I'm Gouda.
Why?
No, that's not what we just said.
That's what you just said.
You name the characteristics.
No, I know cheese. My cheese.
No, no, no. I would like to know which kind of cheese Billy thinks he is.
You're not Gouda.
Smoky, mysterious.
No, Gouda is very clear.
No, Gouda's smoky and mysterious.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
That's it? I thought you were going to describe more.
No, that's about as far as I'm going to go. Jack? Why don't you say what cheese you are?
I don't know why I'm leaning towards a sharp cheddar.
You're sharp.
Mm-hmm. I'm sharp. I'm a little, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just really thinking about the unexpected cheddar from Trader Joe's.
Crumbly? Do you crumble?
Not really. That one is kind of crumbly.
It's crumbly. It's not too moist. It's sort of dry, but it has this very sharp. You're very sharp.
Yeah, I'm sharp and, sharp and dry.
You're like a...
And unexpected sometimes.
Absolutely. I think you nailed it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm the unexpected cheddar from Trader Joe's, which, by the way, if you like cheddar cheese, it is fantastic. I can eat a block in one sitting.
Yes.
What cheese are you?
I don't know. I'm going to name characteristics and you guys name the cheese.
Go.
Okay.
Strong.
Okay. So we need like a dense cheese.
Yeah.
Polio string cheese.
String cheese?
I only said one thing.
I'm sorry. I jumped the gun.
Strong. Funny.
Cheese isn't funny.
Light.
Light.
Okay, no, I'm not.
Strong and light.
Heavy. Emotionally heavy.
Light. No, heavy.
Sad cheese. Drunk. Drinking cheese.
Is there a cheese that's infused with like a whiskey?
Pub cheese.
Like a
cheese curdle.
So pub cheese.
Like a beer cheese. Yeah.
I feel like you're a beer cheese curdle.
Yeah. No, thank you. But I'm flattered.
No, like what you. About a cheese that goes on like a poutine?
I'm okay with that. With how I am. Pub cheese will do just fine. Let's just end this. No more introspection for me today.
Okay, go get our cheeses at your local. Yes.
Trader Joe's.
Who are not a sponsor.
Okay, we've killed 12 minutes and 34 seconds of time.
What was our sign off going to be? Somebody gave us a really good sign off.
The time of death.
Time of death, 12 minutes, 42 seconds, but I might cut some out. But time of death, I'll fill it in later.
So one of us says, should we call it?
Should we call it?
Oh, okay.
Time of death.
I'll do, should we call it? Yeah. And then you have to say it because you, okay. All right, should we call it?
Yeah, time of death, ellipses.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.